Now, House impeachment managers rested their prosecution of former President Trump yesterday. Today, senators heard from Trump's legal team. The trial, which began Tuesday of this week, has shifted into a question and answer section, and it's not expected to go on past the weekend. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been watching the trial unfold all week? What have been your impressions? Did you just tune in today? What's your reaction to what you saw? What do you want the outcome to be? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Susan Johnson is with us, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Whitewater. Susan, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get to this week's trial, the last time I think you were on with us was January 7th, the day after the insurrection at the Capitol. That's what led us here with this impeachment trial this week. Now that more than a month has gone by, I'm curious just what's on your mind in the intervening month?
Yeah, it's interesting to reflect back on that conversation that we had that was just over a month ago in the immediate aftermath. And I think people were still dealing with just the shock of what had happened the day before. I think that what we've learned is, quite interesting, and I think quite telling. Things that, I would point to is the fact that we didn't know at the time just how well planned the event had been, or the riot, I should say, the insurrection had been. We didn't know at the time that there was considerable planning that had gone on in different places, to get people all together, the extent to which members of the Trump campaign team were involved in some of the planning and organizing of at least the rally that led to the insurrection. Also, we had a kind of an idea of what had happened in the Capitol, but over the past month, and particularly over the past few days, we've seen quite a lot more footage from inside the Capitol that gave us, I would say for most of us, a kind of a chilling look at what was going on during those hours when the Capitol was breached. I would say also since then we had the inauguration of President Biden, and former President Trump, because he's no longer on social media, has really, I would say, disappeared in a way. We haven't heard from him. And that's something that I don't think we would have expected to have been the case when he left office. And then just one more thing, I would say on the 7th and those few days after the event, there was a lot more outrage from Republicans, both elected Republicans and out in the electorate. And as we're vote counting in regard to what might happen with the vote to convict, we're seeing that a lot of people who expressed considerable outrage are likely going to vote to acquit the former president when they have the vote, likely, like you said, this weekend.
One of the main arguments from the president's defense team, in addition to saying that the vote itself, the impeachment trial itself, was unconstitutional because the president is out of office, they were contesting the idea that there's a straight line between the president's rhetoric and the events in the Capitol on January 6th. I want to give a listen to one of the former president's legal team, David Schoen.
Throughout the course of today, my colleagues and I will explain in some detail the simple fact that President Trump did not incite the horrific, terrible riots of January 6th. We'll demonstrate that, to the contrary, the violence and looting goes against the law and order message he conveyed to every citizen of the United States throughout his presidency, including on January 6th.
And that's stacked up against the impeachment manager's case, saying that especially since the election, pointing toward the president inviting people to the rally weeks ahead of the event, spreading false claims about the outcome of the election. Talk about the clash of those two ideas. The president generated this event. The president didn't, his legal team says.
Well, remember, this is a trial. And so you had the prosecution, the House managers, who were laying out their case for why they believe that this charge of incitement was appropriate given from the rhetoric that former President Trump was using. And you had his attorneys, on the other hand, pointing back to former President Trump's law and order message as being a bit of a defense. I think that if you look, however, at the language that former President Trump used at that rally to all of those people amassed there and spoke to going to the Capitol, now we are going to the Capitol, and using terms, you know, fight like hell, and I'm going to go there with you, and some of the other language that was used, I think that while both sides were clearly using information that was most beneficial to their campaign, I think that the House managers were honestly being more truthful in representing what happened on January 6th.
Talking to Susan Johnson, political scientist at UW-Whitewater, with the latest on the impeachment trial. Something that came up in the Q&A now, we had a couple of moderate Republican senators bring up the question, basically, what did the president know about when Vice President Pence might be in danger, when he was evacuated? They said the president had no idea that Pence was in danger. But we had Senator Tommy Tuberville, Republican from Alabama, saying he had talked to the president on the phone, saying that the vice president had been evacuated, that the president was watching TV as that happened. And after that, the president tweeting still an attack on Vice President Pence for not trying to overturn the election. How key a moment do you think that is, that the president may have understood that the vice president was being evacuated and not spoken up at that point?
Well, I think it's one of a series of key moments that the House managers pointed to, and that the senators who are the jurors should be considering quite strongly. And yes, as you said, Tommy Tuberville, who is a strong supporter of President Trump, so, you know, not someone who you would expect to not support the president, indicated that he was on the phone with the president and said that he needed to go, and that Vice President Pence had just been evacuated. And we heard report after report of the president watching this on television. So I think it's an important point. And I think that for those senators to have been asking that question, I think is telling, because perhaps in their mind, it might make a difference to them.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Scott is with us in Iron River. Scott, hi.
Yes, hi. Nice to be on with you both. One question that's been really burning at me, actually, for the last 4 years, and it's come to a head now with the whole insurrection, the trial and stuff, is you never hear the Democrats saying, kind of like as we're all trying to work through this and come to some terms, you know, let's work together and stuff. But, you know, if the tide was turned, if it were a Democrat doing and saying the same things, let alone an African-American president or a woman that happened to have last name Clinton, if those people would have been doing or saying the same thing, and especially standing in front of a crowd of, say, Black Lives Matter protesters, saying the exact same words and having the exact same outcome at the Capitol, why don't we hear Democrats using that? And I know, you know, from a legal standpoint, you probably cannot. But I learned yesterday on your program that this is not a legal trial. It's more of a political trial. And I would think you would hear Democrats using that. So I'm really interested in your answer.
Thanks for the call, Scott. I mean, I think over the years, Democrats have said, yeah, if one of us was saying what Trump said, I mean, I think people said if any other candidate, period, was saying what Donald Trump was saying, people might react differently. I don't know. What do you think, Susan?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure what Scott was asking, but I think that absolutely, I think that it's not Democrat or Republican. It's Trump and a whole lot of everybody else, as you're indicating. And there have been people who have been forced to resign from political office, have not won re-election for office or election for office, for saying a lot less than what former President Trump has been able to say. And so I think that's where I'll leave it.
Thanks for the call. Go to Jim in Brookfield now. Jim, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I think the media, you know, is really at fault for a lot of things, because they showed all summer long, you could see cops getting water thrown on them and everything else happening. Al Sharpton saying, you know, fry them like pigs or fry them like bacon, talking about cops. And now you've got this, and it's kind of like what you're seeing here is the same kind of violence. And you can't, and I think your guest said something about the all the pre-planning that went into this and the riot that ensued as a result of the rally. Well, wait, the pre-planning came in before the rally, and then all of a sudden it's a result of the rally.
I got you, Jim. Thanks for the call. So first of all, Susan, the an equivalency Jim's saying between the Black Lives Matter protests and the violence and arson and looting and things like that and the Capitol. And that's something we've heard from Republicans as well. What do you make of that argument?
Right. And so what we're focusing on right now is the impeachment trial of former President Trump with the charge of incitement. And so we're speaking, you know, directly about what he did or may or may not have done to lead to the insurrection that took place after the rally. And so when we look at issues related to some of the protests that took place this summer, and you're right, people are making a lot of, well, what about that? And I would say that there's a couple of ways to approach it. The protests that took place in the summer that were sometimes accompanied by violence, the protests themselves were for a social justice movement in response to systemic racism and police brutality and things like that. And there was a separation between a lot of the violence that took place and the protesting. But I also would say that when making these comparisons, if that was unacceptable, then so was this unacceptable. You know, so maybe thinking about it that way.
Thanks for the call. We're talking to Susan Johnson from UW-Whitewater about this week's impeachment trial of former President Trump. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What have you taken away from watching or listening to the impeachment trial over the course of the week? What do you want to come out of it? What do you think it all means for future politics? You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Susan Johnson, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Whitewater, looking at the latest on the impeachment trial. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts. We'll go back to your calls now. Todd is with us in Janesville. Todd, hello.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up, Todd?
I was just wondering, I know their defense or Trump's defense is freedom of speech and his lawyers or whatever. But I was wondering why that is allowed when he is the leader of this country and he speaks for this country, and his speech should not be considered freedom of speech. He's actually speaking terms or beliefs or whatever you way you want to put it for this country. I cannot fathom why the Republicans or anybody, Democrat, independents, cannot see that what he did was a breach of his oath.
Todd, thanks a lot for the call. And that's an argument, Susan, we've seen from the House impeachment managers. The president talking isn't just an American citizen talking. This is someone who's taken an oath of office as president. Is that a significant distinction to make?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point to bring up, in that we're not just talking about an individual's First Amendment rights. We're speaking about the spokesperson, let's say, for the United States, and what higher threshold there might be or what higher expectations there would be. I think that when his attorneys are making the free speech case, they're making the free speech case more akin to what we would consider, you know, yelling fire in a crowded theater and things like that. The what you can't do in terms of incitement. And I just want to say one thing in regard to incitement and my comment earlier about the planning for this at the event. Yes. The house managers looked back over the course of the buildup to the election and the statements and comments that President Trump made about the election being stolen. And then throughout the campaign, and then after the election was over and he lost, that led to the rally on the 6th that then led to the insurrection. So it's not just language that he spoke on that day, but things that he said throughout the course of the campaign that I think are all wrapped up into that idea of incitement.
Thanks for the call. We'll go to Joe now in Sheboygan. Joe, hello.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me on.
What did you want to bring up, Joe?
Well, what I want to bring up is that, you know, today's Republican Party is not your father's Republican Party. It seems to me like they're leaning so far to the right that they've always become radicalized, and this has become Trump's party. How that happened, I have no idea, because now we're looking at a cult personality almost like. You know, the way that Hitler came about, and even Mussolini, we can almost compare it to the way that this man, Trump, carries himself. You know, he is looked at like some kind of god from these Republicans that went down to the Capitol after he incited them for months. You know, you cannot, it's indicative of the Republicans try to bring up Black Lives Matter movement. You cannot compare it, you know, and then trying to say that it was Antifa with a fake flag going in as Trump supporters to take over the Capitol. We're talking about incitement going in and trying to take over democracy. Our democracy is very fragile. You know,
I'm going to jump in. You gave us a lot to talk about, Joe. First of all, Joe's suggestion about Trump's role in the Republican Party, Trump, in effect, being the Republican Party. Susan, a lot of people in the Republican Party are trying to figure out how to navigate that. We saw Nikki Haley, formerly in the administration, in new remarks, kind of distancing herself, a likely presidential candidate there. How do you see Republicans balancing Republican Party versus Trump's Republican Party?
What we're seeing is really interesting in that, you know, Nikki Haley is a great example in that piece that just came out today and different things she said over different points of time when that those interviews were taking place. She's someone who's eyeing perhaps a 2024 run for president, and others are doing the same thing. And they're trying to make a calculation as to how impactful will former President Trump be on that. And quite frankly, is he going to run himself in 2024? And so we see a small number of Republicans who voted for impeachment in the House and a small number in the Senate who voted to keep the process moving forward. But for the most part, we're seeing the majority of Republicans in the Senate and the House aligning themselves with former President Trump. And so I think the caller is correct that most people would agree that at least right now, former President Trump represents the Republican Party. And it's just a matter of figuring out how long that exists and will the other Republicans, the more moderate Republicans, let's say, or the institutionalist Republicans, if they're able to regain control of the party.
And Joe also suggested that the events of this month point toward the fragility of American democracy. And I've talked to an expert on kind of strongman politics who studied Mussolini a lot, raising the same questions. I don't know. Do you, Susan, feel like maybe our institutions are more fragile than we might have thought a year ago or 5 years ago?
Yeah, I think honestly, if you would have probably asked me that even at the end of 2020. You know, I think what happened on January 6th really shook a lot of people to the core. The idea that the Capitol had been breached for the first time since the War of 1812, that you had people, you know, calling out to hang the vice president and setting up gallows right there and looking for the Speaker of the House and all of the violence that we saw. I mean, I think that for a lot of us, it was a reminder that perhaps the democracy is more fragile than we had thought.
in our last minute, Susan, it seems likely from many Republican senators' comments that the president will not ultimately be convicted here. That said, do you think there's a value in having the arguments laid out from both sides and recapping the events of January 6th, that there is a value here to have gone through this exercise for the American people?
Well, I think there's a value because there were very legitimate questions that were put forward that now people are being asked to go on record and indicate whether or not they in fact believe that what President Trump did over the course of, you know, several months was incitement to the insurrection. I think also it provided a lot for people to take in and see as far as what happened that day and then, you know, make a decision about whether or not that's acceptable.
We'll leave it there. Susan, thanks for joining us again today.
Happy to be with you.
Susan Johnson is Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Whitewater. We talked with her about this week's impeachment trial, the second one of former President Donald Trump, including the defense attorneys from Trump making their case today. You can follow live events there at WPR.org. That's WPR.org. As things are happening there, you can listen live.